This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Mozart wrote his final three symphonies over a period of just 9 weeks in the summer of 1788. At 4 movements per symphony, this works out to about 5.5 days per movement, which is incredibly fast, especially considering that he was also writing other pieces at the same time, giving piano lessons, tending a sick wife, entertaining friends, moving to a new apartment, and pestering his fellow Freemasons for loans. This was a particularly tough time financially for Mozart, and in one of his letters he wrote that he hoped to make some money from a series of upcoming concerts. He was probably planning to premiere at least one of these symphonies at those concerts, but as far as we can tell, they never took place, and there's no record that Mozart ever heard his final symphony during his lifetime. Of course, Mozart had no idea these would be his last symphonies. He had no reason to think that he wasn't going to live well into the 19th century, and although that is not what happened, he did have another 3.5 years to write more. But since he didn't, they stand as his crowning achievements in symphonic music, drawing together everything he had learned about writing for orchestra and leaving some tantalizing hints of what the future might have held. Mozart's final symphony, number 41, is known as the Jupiter, and as with so many musical nicknames, it was not the composer who first called it that. It was actually Johann Peter Salomon, who was a violinist and concert promoter best known as the man who convinced Haydn to travel to England. But it's certainly an apt nickname. Jupiter was the largest known planet, and this was the largest and grandest symphony anyone had ever heard. The English composer and publisher Vincent Novello visited Mozart's widow and their son Franz Xaver in 1829 and reported Mozart's son said he considered the finale to his father's Sinfonia in C, which Solomon christened the Jupiter, to be the highest triumph of instrumental composition, and I agree with him. End quote. He wasn't the only one. Georg Nicholas von Nissen, who published a groundbreaking Mozart biography in 1828, said his great symphony in C with the closing fugue is truly the first of all symphonies. In no work of this kind does the divine spark of genius shine more brightly and beautifully. End quote. Even though the opening movement of the Jupiter is marked allegro vivace, which is quite fast, it seems to be taking its time. The opening phrases are stately and grand, with something like the pomp of a royal procession. But every time that opening phrase returns, it takes on a very different character. For example, in the passage in the middle of the exposition where the opening emphatic theme is played by just first and second violins. The violins are quiet and subtle, while the woodwinds chatter in the spotlight. Near the end of the exposition, Mozart borrows a tune from one of his concert arias that seems simple, but adds another touch of sparkle. Between the strings, the oboes, and the bassoon, the melody is sounding in 3 different octaves at once. It's the kind of little musical marvel that Mozart seemed to be able to toss off where no one else could. He then jumps into the development with a very simple transition from C to E flat. which quickly turns into a scenic tour around the harmonic landscape with some impressive moments of counterpoint. As the melodic lines ravel and unravel. For the second movement, the violins play with mutes, giving it a veiled, misty character. Some writers have said that this movement is based on a sarabande, which was a courtly dance from Baroque-era France, but Mozart doesn't treat it as a dance movement. There's a minor key section, and a development section, as if it were in sonata form, a structure that came long after the Baroque era. It even has its own recapitulation, taking us right back to the beginning. One of the ways in which this symphony looks ahead is in how Mozart carries melodies and figures over from movement to movement, but treated differently. The first and second movements both included passages in which the bass line descended by chromatic steps. In the third movement menuetto, the primary figure right off the bat is a descending chromatic line. And Mozart ends up developing it into a winding canon for the woodwinds. The trio section starts with one of Mozart's favorite musical jokes. The end of the phrase comes before its beginning. That is, the opening notes of each phrase sound like a concluding cadence, while the notes that follow sound like they're leading up to that conclusion, but they end up being the end. Mozart's friend Haydn used this trick in his string quartet known as the Frog, which was published about 10 months before Mozart wrote this symphony. In the middle of the trio comes this four-note pattern. Which will become very important very soon. In fact, it opens the finale and becomes the foundation of the entire movement. It's a pattern that Mozart had used several times before, and which he may even have borrowed from his good friend Michael Haydn. He continues to play tricks with it. Where those rapid scales went up at the beginning of the first movement, here they run down. Mozart introduces a number of other themes here, so you'll recognize them when they come back in the development section, woven together in counterpoint. And he even works in another descending chromatic line for the woodwinds, just as he did in the first three movements. But But the biggest surprise comes in the coda, where he puts together a quintuple invertible counterpoint. Five melodies sounding against one another, harmonized so that any one can fall anywhere in the orchestral texture. It not only looks backward to the kind of elaborate counterpoint that Bach and Handel loved, but forward to the dramatic power of Beethoven's great fugues. One commentator even wrote that it reveals vistas of contrapuntal infinity. End quote. Each of Mozart's last three symphonies has a different, clearly defined character, and it's been said that each was written with a different purpose in mind. Number 39, they say, was Mozart simply enjoying the act of creation, writing a great symphony simply because he could. Number 40 is Restless and Agitated, which supposedly reflected Mozart's own state of mind at the time. But number 41 was said to be Mozart's conscious bid for immortality. Like the Roman god and the planet that share its name, the Jupiter still stands out as one of the greatest of its kind. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.